whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game day, road trip continues, Sabres and Flames tonight, and it will be an 8:30 pregame for us on MSG. What are we expecting tonight as Buffalo looks to make it 2 wins in consecutive manner here on the trip?
One of the few last remaining trip to the old Saddle Dome in Calgary, because they...
No, they're a long ways away from a new rink.
So. Is it like, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
I think, well, yeah, but then, I mean, it's one trip a year, so they got this one and maybe 3 more.
Well,
so.
You surprised me, Marty. Did not expect that to come out of your mouth today. Was not even thinking about nostalgia.
I'm going to miss the Saddle Dome. That's what I'm thinking, is I'm going to like really enjoy these last few trips for the Sabres into the Saddle Dome. I think it's a unique building. It was always a fun building to play in. I've got some stories to tell. I once took a Jerome Iginla shot inside the thumb that I made a save. Don't ask me how I got it inside the right thumb, the blocker hand. I went and he broke my thumb, but my hand was so numb that I didn't feel it until after the game. And I was like, ooh, that one hurt. But it was fine. It was bruised or whatever. They said it was broken. I don't believe it. But we had a practice at the old rink next door.
The Corral,
where Lindy was mad and really mad at a performance that we had had either in Edmonton or Vancouver, that the back skate had one of the most, we're getting back skate, Duffer, and we're laughing. We are laughing, in tears laughing, because Václav Varada, he had either like cramps in his legs were stiff, and he was doing the tripod like he was 5 years old, trying to stay up while skating. And we're supposed to be in trouble, but we're laughing because poor V could barely move. And Lindy was so mad, he blew the whistle and told us all to get off the ice because we weren't taking it seriously. So, yeah, there was some good times to be had at the Saddle Dome at the Corral next door back in the days, that's for sure.
Well, apparently he told them to get off the ice after the practice on Tuesday.
Yes.
Tuesday morning practice before the win in Vancouver, it was not a morning skate typically. It involved some battles for about half an hour, and he was very firm in saying, get off the ice. So
yeah, and he's done that a lot. He used to do that a lot. Like, guys love to hang on the ice after the morning skate, take some shots, whatever. And there's moments where he's like, okay, it's business now. Everybody off the ice. Torts used to do that a ton. When he's like, everybody off the ice. So you have a practice. They responded well in Vancouver. I feel like it's going to be the same type of game against Calgary, where Calgary, they don't score much. They don't give up much, not just in the actual raw numbers, but when you look at the analytics, expected goals 5-on-5, they're one of the worst. I think they're 29th in the league, but they're a top 10 team defensively in expected goals against 5-on-5. So it's going to be tight. You have to win the battles, and you have to do exactly the way you did it in Vancouver, where you just got to earn your opportunities when they present themselves.
Well, the difference, of course, though, is the best attributes of the Flames has led them to an unexpected position right now of being in a wild card spot in the West. So what do you think the Flames, and we'll talk to Darren Dreger later in the hour, what do you think the Flames are going to do at the deadline?
Well, I mean, I think if I was in the Flames position, I get it. You're right there in a playoff spot. They're the only team, by the way, out of the 16 teams that are in a playoff spot right now, the only teams that have a negative goal differential of all the teams in playoff spots right now. So I'm looking at it as, is it sustainable? St. Louis, Vancouver, Utah, they're coming right behind them. They have a couple of UFAs up front that I think would get some calls on. Like, Kuzmenko is an interesting one for me. Do you want to move on Kuzmenko? He has a 12-team no trade, and try to acquire something for the future, knowing that you're into it right now, right? So if I was Calgary, I would do it. If I was Calgary, I would say we still have to build for the future. It doesn't make that team worse now. Like if you trade Kuzmenko, it doesn't take away.
Who's from taking him? It's not a terrible year.
Yeah, but he's a UFA. It's a depth.
Exactly. Like what other team is going to the deadline and saying, boy, we should rent this guy? Like, well, he had a flash when he joined Calgary last year from Vancouver, but it's been abysmal.
It's been bad, but he's last year he had 25 points in 29 games. That was good. This year he's got two goals this year. But I think a team that's looking at a bottom six help, like a third line help, maybe some depth, can say, okay, well, we'll give you like a draft pick for that, and you move on. I think it doesn't hurt the Flames to acquire a draft pick and maybe flip that at a later date. I think that's where you can maybe open up a spot.
And open up a spot for what?
Well, for a call up for somebody that you want to really acquire.
Made their call ups. They have injuries that has necessitated that.
They have two first-rounders this year.
So you don't think Calgary's going to make a meaningful deal to improve and enhance their chances?
Not this year. I don't think they're going to. But look, they have two first-rounders this year. They have two first-rounders the year after. They have two second-rounders this year. They've got a lot of draft picks to be able to trade. I think it happens more, in the offseason, that looking ahead to the draft, they're like, hey, let's trade some picks and let's go make a splash at the draft and let's get better for next year. I think this year they're probably a seller more than a buyer.
Well, that would hurt the fan base that has not had an awful lot in the way of playoff appearances. And especially,
it's weird because I think that the Flames...
Wouldn't you just stay the course? I would ride it. I wouldn't go... I would stay in the middle. I would drive in the safe lane. Like, there's no reason to sell.
Well, I mean,
to me, like,
unless you were saying,
what are you selling?
Unless they were saying they're selling Kadri, right? Like, people are calling on Kadri, and you're like, you're selling Kadri. I don't think you're doing that. And so I think maybe
he controls that, though.
He controls that because he has a no movement clause, yes.
Yeah.
But I still think that's maybe where the phone calls are going to come if you are another team that is. Looking at a realistic goal to win the Stanley Cup, you're calling on Kadri. You're calling on those type of players. But if you're the Flames, you're not making that deal. And really, when you look at the Flames organization, I thought a year ago they were going to sell. I thought they were going to trade Kadri. I thought they were going to look to sell. They didn't want to do that. So I don't think they're going to sell like big pieces, but I don't think they're going to buy either this year. I think they will probably do what you're saying, stay in the safe lane, maybe sell a player they don't want, a UFA, whatever, but it doesn't affect them next year.
No, and I mean, I think, it has been talked about a lot that Rasmus Anderson would be the one that is a target for many teams, but he's been too important to this organization. And I think they will retain and then next year build upon extending him as he gets a little closer to 30 years of age. Like they're an interesting team because they don't have a lot of star power, but they've had incredible goaltending from Dustin Wolf, who we would expect to see on home ice tonight, because not only have the Flames been good at home, Wolf has been amazing, and we'll dive into that in our pregame show tonight at 8:30 on MSG. But you're right, like I don't see an awful lot here worth selling. And I just think, and it's funny how you mentioned like the negative goal differential. There are some things that would come across as obvious, but I would like to point out that their negative goal differential comes from the fact that they don't score enough. And people would say, well, obviously, no. Like some teams in the East have negative goal differential because their goals against has been so inflated, right? That's not the case in Calgary. They just struggle to score, but everybody behind them also has a negative goal differential. So this is not a scenario where you're looking at a team going, oh, well, this team should be the one that's actually in a wild card right now. No, Calgary's earned their place. There's a lot of teams behind them that haven't lived up to expectations that also have negative goal differentials. That's why I think, all of that being said, I think Calgary needs to stay the course here and believe that they can keep doing this. And yeah, and I know that you're not winning the cup. I get it. But they deserve to make it. Like, they deserve to stay in the race to make it.
Do you, like, I mean, I think everybody in Calgary is looking at it saying, we have a spot in the dance. Like, we are a team that surprised a lot of people. We play tight games. We're good defensively. We have our spot in the dance. Right now, I'm inclined to put Calgary ahead of Vancouver just because I think Vancouver is so dysfunctional and it's, you know, they've not been good defensively. They've not had good goaltending. So I'm going to put Dustin Wolf and his performances in Calgary ahead of Vancouver. But I think St. Louis and Utah, and to a certain extent, maybe even Seattle, are pushing. Like, they're coming. And I think if St. Louis gets on a run, St. Louis can bypass Vancouver and Calgary and get in, because I feel like that team has more of the ingredient that you would want in a playoff team compared to Calgary. But again, Calgary's been a great story, and that's nice to see.
Yeah, from Buffalo's standpoint, all the questions that we just said about the Flames, answer them on the Buffalo side, because now we're getting, you know, more and more rumors and whatever. I mean, I don't know why it hits at this point in time. I suppose part of it is, you know, some general managers have done more talking at the midway point of the year, in this like exact window, like this week. So then that's like Cheveldayoff just did with the Jets, and Dubas kind of did. Dubas is a little bit more on a regular basis in Pittsburgh, but there seems to be more in the news cycle because of some, oh, I don't know, strategies or plans that are being pumped out into the media sphere, you know, by respective GMs right now.
Yeah, definitely there's been a lot more media availability with GMs about a month away from the trade deadline, a little bit over 5 weeks. So that is definitely a reason for it. And two, I think that the Sabres over the last few years have always been the one team that, oh, you know what, they got good young players. They got prospects. They got young NHL-ready guys. Oh, they got a guy that maybe is not performing as much as well as you would want to. He's going to be in the rumors. I think this year it's probably a little bit different just because the Sabres and where they are, they were definitely hoping to be in a much better place. And having been a point away from the playoffs 2 years ago, last year, a step back a little bit, and this year seems to be taking another step in the wrong direction. You may include some more NHL-ready, NHL-established players into the conversation. You know, where I would always think that a guy like Bo Byram would be a part of the success of the Sabres. They acquired him at the deadline last year. He comes in. I'm looking at the Sabres this year thinking it's a team that on paper have a good roster. I'm looking at playoffs. And if that's going in the right direction, you're thinking Bo Byram is staying for a long time. But now because of the performances this year and the results, you're thinking, well, is Bo Byram on the move now? He's a restricted free agent. So you may even get more value out of a Bo Byram knowing that it's not a rental. It's a restricted free agent. And what does Bo Byram want to do? So I think we're going to see and hear a lot of Byram talk. We're going to hear and see a lot of Jason Zucker talk. We're going to maybe even hear some Ryan McLeod talk. Like, he's out
Jordan
right
Greenway.
Now. Jordan Greenway talk. If and when Greenway comes back. Like, there's a lot more of those type of conversation that will happen this year in and around the Sabres, but you can also include Dylan Cousins and, you know, some of the young prospects that are in Rochester playing well. Like, there's, you have everything. You have older guys, established NHL players that are in their mid-20s, and you have prospect. You have everything here to be part of every conversation.
Well, obviously, again, Darren Dreger from TSN going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll dive in a little deeper on, you know, other bigger names that could be in the news cycle. Obviously, if you're on social media and are interested in hockey talk, you're probably seeing Pittsburgh being in the news cycle. And, and you know, I mean, real quick, because I don't want to overlap with Dregs, but, like, do you think the Penguins are actually going to move a significant, longstanding, dare I say, historical name in Penguins history by the time the deadline comes and passes?
Oh, well, there's like three names, right, in the Pittsburgh Penguins roster.
Well, there
right
should be about 10, though, so I don't know what three you're talking about.
No, historical, I'm saying, like, historical names, there's really three. There's Crosby, Malkin, and Letang. Like, those are historical Pittsburgh Penguins winning cups and everything.
Well, Rust was there, too.
Rust could be in that. I think he's the next year. And look, a guy like Brian Rust, I feel like playing with Crosby is the perfect fit. And he's performed at a very high level. The one that keeps coming back to me is, could they get rid of Erik Karlsson? Is anybody going to bite at this? This is like a shiny metal hook in the water that you don't even hide with a worm or anything. It's about as shiny as you can, and nobody should bite on it. But a team might. You don't know. Like, I just would be very surprised if they can do that. And then it leaves Evgeny Malkin. Evgeny Malkin's got another year left after this season at $6.1 million. Could the Pittsburgh Penguins retain $1 million, $2 million, and then somebody gets Malkin at $4, $4.5, $5 million? I think there would be some interest there. It's just a matter of, would Cal Dubas trade a legend like Evgeny Malkin at this time right now?
Well, I could answer that for you. Yes, he would. Because
if
that's
you are Cal Dubas, Duffer, do you trade Malkin? And your answer is yes.
100%. But tell me where he's going.
Wow. Would he be going to Colorado? Colorado needs help. Would he be going to St. Louis? St. Louis maybe wanted to make a push and say, I think if he goes, he's going out west. Could he go to Vancouver? You know, you got all the JT Miller trade talk and whatever. Could that open the door for Evgeny Malkin to go to Vancouver? I think there's quite a few teams that could be in on Malkin and have the flexibility or trade a player to open up that door so that Malkin could come in. I think that happens.
What's your hat? My monitor's small. I can't read it.
It's the Kemville 73s. Okay. It's actually was my son's hat, but I was out.
I should have guessed.
Putting the garbage on the side of the road. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't worn a beanie or a toque to any of our shows this year. That was a staple of mine last year. Remember, I used to always put the toques on, and I haven't this year yet. So I figured, why not? Today's the day. Let's go. It's cold.
Yeah, now that we're out of the cold snap, good work.
Well, I think it's still going to be a little bit cooler than you know, it's not going
to
be
35. Never a bad time to wear a hat.
No, it's good.
But I was just shocked that you chose red for Calgary. Sea of red, you know, whatever. So, good work.
That went way above my, you know, understanding of the situation right here. I don't have that awareness. Sorry.
Amazing. Buffalo's situation, which is response to the poor showing, the poor battle level on Monday against Seattle. I think, honestly, every fan would be wondering, can there be a lasting impact from the approach Lindy took Tuesday morning?
Well, I think Lindy is hoping that it does, that it's not a one-off. It's not we had a hard morning skate, a practice, and they responded. They responded by, you know, playing well against a Vancouver Canucks team that is a little bit up in the air. I didn't think that the Miller line was any good in that. But again, maybe that is Yuri Kulik, Tage Thompson, and J.J. Paterka's impact. And now in this game in Calgary, that's a whole totally different challenge. If they go top line against top line in Calgary tonight, Jiří Kulik, J.J. Paterka, and Tage Thompson would go against Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri. Look, you know, playing center against J.T. Miller is one thing if you're Jiří Kulik, but playing center against Nazem Kadri if you're Jiří Kulik is a whole other thing. Like, there is a lot more physicality. There's a lot more chippiness. There's a lot there that Jiří probably has never seen at the NHL level. So I'm looking forward to see how that carries over, how that carries on to this game tonight. Do you back off or do you stand up and say, hey, you know what? I'm here for a reason. Now, we'll see, because the Sabres are in Calgary and there's a time difference, if Jason Zucker plays tonight, and if he does, where does he fit in the lineup? I would anticipate he'd play with, you know, Tuck and Cousins and take the place of Tyson Kozak. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Lindy Ruff wants to see Zucker with Kulik and Thompson and moves Paterka back with Cousins and Tuck. Like, there's a lot of options. I wouldn't change the top line, but there's a lot of options there.
Which Sabre is most likely to play with Dustin Wolf's stick?
That is a great, great question. Which Sabre is more likely to not know the rules? Because,
I just want to see him. I don't care about the rules. The rules are, we don't need to get into the rules. We just want to see chaos out there, like we saw in Columbus, Toronto.
Yeah, but the reason why Austin Matthews picked up Elvis Merzlikin's stick is, number one, Merzlikin's grabbed Matthews' stick out of his hands, but Matthews admitted after the game, I didn't know the rules. I guess I should pick up the rule book, and go through it, because he actually picked up the opposition's goaltender's stick and presented it in the slot as if he wanted a pass or a deflection. So you're not even allowed to grab your own goalie stick and play with it. If you grab your own goalie stick, the only thing you can do with it is skate it to the goalie and not be involved in the play. Because if you are involved in the play, you're playing with illegal equipment, just like the call that Matthews got yesterday. So you ask which Sabres player is most likely to play with Dustin Wolf's stick in this game. And I am sorry to say, but I am going to say Zach Benson. Because number one, I think Zach Benson is probably the most likely candidate to be in Dustin Wolf's face and create that chaos. And sorry, Zach, but you just are the one guy that I think if I ask you about the rules, I don't know that he would know or would be like 100% sure if that's available. So I think Benson is the most likely to get involved in a situation where he's trying to play with a goalie stick on the ice.
Avoiding nachos or playing with goalie sticks, which is more likely to be discussed at the next general manager's meeting?
Avoiding nachos. Although, you know what's funny is because the other day, Jonathan Quick grabbed Juraj Slafkovský's stick right out of his hands because Quick lost the stick in the scrum and reached in the pile of sticks like he was, you know, playing street hockey and he was forming two teams by throwing sticks everywhere. He grabbed Slafkovský's stick and he played with his stick. Now, it's hard for the referee to determine, ooh, does the goalie have one of his teammates' stick or did he grab it from somebody else on the ice? No penalties were called on that play. So now, in the same week, we have Slafkovský losing his stick to Jonathan Quick, and we have Austin Matthews losing his stick to Elvis Merzlikin. So is this something that the GMs are going to talk about and say, what about the goalies? They're cheating. They're grabbing everybody's stick again. We have to make something. Like, goalies should not be – players are not allowed to play with a goalie's stick, so goalies should not be allowed to play with a player's stick. If you lose your stick, so be it. You're not allowed to have a player's stick.
Well, Elvis got penalized too.
Elvis got penalized not because he had Matthews' stick in his hand and playing with it, because he grabbed it out of his hand, so he got a holding the stick penalty.
But seems like one of the same to me. Rob Ray Hall of Fame night is coming up.
Bobby Ryan, I think it was Bobby Ryan, scored with, but that's a situation where you're technically not allowed to play.
Right, they missed the call. Ryan's goal never should have stood years ago.
But it's a great story. He scores a goal with a stick, the curve the wrong way. Mm-hmm. After the goal, he shows the stick to the other player, gives it to him, and then goes on to celebrate his goal. That was awesome.
Rob Ray Hall of Fame night is worthy of celebration, of course. It comes up at the end of the month. Nashville is in on January 31st. We got doors opening at 5. Ceremony begins at 6:05. First 10,000 fans to receive a commemorative pin set. Sabres.com/tickets. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, coming up on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
That's what we say about Darren Dreger, the hockey insider. Nothing else comes close. Hi, Dregs. How are you? And what's happening in the news cycle that may pertain to the Sabres?
It feels like we just kind of rewind and then hit play every single week. And that, I'm not being disparaging as far as the interest from Buffalo's perspective of trying to get something done. But, you know, it's not like the Sabres are in the futures business per se. Of course, they'd be interested in a top prospect, a high pick, and all of that. But the old cliche, hockey trade, seems to apply. And so the messaging from Adams to all calling or inquiring general managers is, hey, we're open for business, but we're not selling off. So if you've got a piece that you want from our roster, then make a fair hockey offer and we'll have that conversation. And so far it's really status quo. And, you know, not too many GMs are disillusioned or even really disappointed by where we're at. I mean, you know, you're closing in on 50 games of the regular season played, you know, because it's such a tight race, primarily in the East, you know, that's probably gumming things up. And then the ongoing saga that is JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, and the fact that they haven't been able to satisfy any sort of connection there. There are a lot of teams that, you know, kind of remain in the wait and see mode, and that's what Buffalo is waiting for. Let's just see how the dust settles.
Do you consider a player like Bo Byram being involved in a hockey trade because he's still an RFA, or is it more of a, look, you know, he needs a new contract. Would he remain here in Buffalo? Is there where does he fit with the group of defensemen? So is this a hockey trade when you look at Bo Byram, or is this more of a, you know, you're selling an asset and trying to acquire maybe some future things?
Well, I think it has to be more of a hockey trade because, you know, again, you're moving out. A defenseman who on a lot of teams would be, you know, a top or a second pairing guy at worst, right? So I think in the just a definition of what a top player would be, well, Bo Byram ticks a lot of boxes there. So that's the value that Kevin Adams would be looking for to get back in return. And contractually where he's at, I don't think that the numbers are going to scare Adams and the Sabres away. And I don't think that Bo Byram maybe is. I don't think he's in a position where he can flat out say, look, I'm not going to sign here. I'm not going to extend long term. He doesn't have that set of clout just yet at his position in his NHL career. So I think there are lots of possibilities. And there is a ton of interest in Bo Byram potentially being in play. But, you know, every time I inquire about Byram, I get the same response from Sabre sources. And hey, everybody has essentially got a price tag, but no one has come close yet to, you know, meeting that criteria. So we'll have to wait and see if something further develops before the deadline.
Well, the teams around Buffalo, certainly in the division, a couple are going head-to-head tonight, Montreal and Detroit, Ottawa, Boston. If you lump those four into trade talks, trade futures, what their plan might be prior to the deadline, what do you think is going to happen with any or all four of those teams?
Well, I'm more intrigued by what Boston is going to do or not do. I mean, we recently heard from Cam Neely, who effectively is the head of hockey operations there, right? And he basically outlined two paths. You know, one is they get firm into the buying mode. And that seems like a bit of a stretch for me when I look at the Boston Bruins, unless you're moving out pieces that you probably want to try and extend, and you look at Trent Frederick, you look at Justin Brazo, but then you dip into what they have in their prospect pool, and I see that they've got Matthew Patra now up from Providence, and you know he's been a real nice piece for them in the last few games that he's played. Beneath Patra, there isn't a whole lot coming, you know, for the Boston Bruins. So what are you using as trade bait here to try and acquire some of these pieces that are going to keep you in the playoff conversation? And then the flip side is, okay, you stand pat and you risk the potential of missing the playoffs. And then what does an offseason look like? You know, with the expectation of that family, the Jacobs family, sure, they want to be supportive of Don Sweeney and everybody there, but their expectation on an annual basis is to certainly make the playoffs and more often than not contend for the Stanley Cup. They weren't able to do that last year. Yeah, they made the playoffs and then they bowed out. They missed the playoffs this year. Then I think we're having a different offseason conversation as to what Boston might do. The other teams, I think that they feel pretty good based on what they've already done. You know, Ottawa for sure. You know, Steve Staios is looking for a little bit more help, particularly on the back end. I feel like Ken Hughes already did that in acquiring Carrier from the Nashville Predators, but he's going to be open for business. So I think teams around that division are basically set, but, you know, the general managers there also willing to do at least a little bit of dabbling to improve their chances.
There was two teams that I was looking at the goalie market, you know, early in the season for some goalie trades. One, they traded both their goaltenders and acquired two of them to Colorado Avalanche. They got Mackenzie Blackwood and Scott Wedgwood. The other one was the Edmonton Oilers, but I think Stuart Skinner's played better. Calvin Pickard's been better. So I don't know that the Oilers are going to do anything. But yesterday we got an injury to Jacob Markstrom. And right. Sheldon Keefe said, well, he's going to miss quite some time.
Yeah.
So are the Devils potentially now looking at, hey, let's kick tires at least to see what the situation would be, because they have Jake Allen and Markstrom was going to be their savior this year.
Yeah. Well, I don't get the sense, and in fairness, you know, I haven't dug too deep on Markstrom other than just at the surface and what the Devils might do. But isn't that the reason that you have a Jake Allen and you have a real comfortable tandem, is that when you get into these situations that you can conceivably get over that hump, unless we're talking about long, long term. And I don't get the sense that that's going to be the issue with Jacob Markstrom. So I think it's pretty early. I do believe that, you know, Tom Fitzgerald, the GM of the New Jersey Devils, all over the map. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think that when you think of a big fish like JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks, I'm sure that the New Jersey Devils are among the 6-7 teams that continue to circle around, you know, that possibility. So if you're continuing to stay in that conversation, then you're probably not looking for anything more than insurance what already you have in the experience of Jake Allen in goal. If you get to that place where, you know, Markstrom isn't responding and he isn't getting better, and now you're getting real uneasy with your goaltending situation. But, you know, based on the preliminary work that I've done on this to this point today, it doesn't sound like they're headed that direction.
Carolina keeps getting linked with Vancouver.
Yeah.
Vegas seems to just, you know, not be on everyone's radar, and then they always make the big move.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. What about those two teams in particular? I mean, Vegas, I only bring it up because they've dropped 6 of their last 7, and we know that that never sits well in Vegas, obviously.
And now William Karlsson is out, so yeah, that's added to the maybe need in Vegas for sure.
Well, week to week too, right? And
yeah,
and so how do you dissect that? Does week to week turn into months? And, you know, because we are a distance away from, you know, the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I think that that's the first reaction that most people had when they saw the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, tweet out earlier that William Karlsson is week to week with that price tag. I mean, there is considerable relief there if it is worst case scenario for him. You know, look, Kelly McCrimmon has a clear history of being very aggressive. And with the support of ownership there, you know, their goal is the same every year. From the moment they stepped into the league, it was, boom, let's get at it. Let's try and win a Stanley Cup. So every resource there is explored and is invested, and there'll be no different to the approach of McCrimmon and George McPhee and company now. But in an exchange that I had recently with Kelly, and it was about something Ray Ferraro and I talked about on the podcast, and you know, I jokingly refer to McCrimmon often as a mad scientist, and Kelly and I go back to his assistant coaching days, you know, in the Western Hockey League. So we're talking 30 plus years. So he knows my style of humor or attempt. But I don't think he found it amusing because especially this year, when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, everything they've done and how they've structured their roster to this point of the season, Carlson aside and this losing skid aside, has been by design in putting them in a real good footing and a sound place. Mm. Not to say that they don't have needs. And again, assuming that Carlson is back healthy enough in time or prior to the playoffs where they can't fully invest that money, I still think that Vegas is looking for a forward and maybe two forwards, but I don't get the sense that they're swimming in a deep pool here. Malkin? I think they're more looking
Would
for
they
deep.
Take Malkin?
I doubt it, but you never know. I know that, look, not that Evgeny Malkin can't contribute at a high level at this point of his NHL career, but I do know, you know, McCrimmon is a super competitive guy. And particularly if you're looking for a bottom six forward, he would want that player to play a pretty aggressive game.
The Calgary Flames are hosting the Sabres tonight. Yeah. Dregs, we had a conversation about what are they going to do before this deadline. Should they buy? Should they sell? Should they stand pat? Can they even consider buying at this time? Like, there's a lot of things that are happening in Calgary. But what do you think they do? What, do you think there is a situation where they acquire, you know, a couple of players to make that push to guarantee themselves a playoff spot?
Well, that's their hope and that's their intent. And they feel like, you know, they've got enough time here remaining in the regular season that they can make a push. I mean, they're not what they were to start the season, but I don't think any of us who know that roster well would look at it and expected them to be able to sustain the way they were playing in the first quarter of the regular season. But they do have some good stories, and they've got some good, young, interesting prospects and players that are showing that there's some NHL quality there, right? So I think that there is an appetite to add, but an affordable add. And sure, Craig Conroy is looking for, you know, a top six centerman. Well, there aren't too many contending teams that are in the market for a 1-2 or a 3-seed. You know, that's just the reality every year at this time. That's we go through. Yeah, I'd like to add a top four defenseman. I'd sure like to get a number two or a number three center. But again, what's the affordability of that? And how much of Conroy's future is he going to have to invest to make a deal like that happen? But I do think that he... reward probably isn't the right word or term, but I think he would like to give this group a bit more of an opportunity to get closer to the cut line and lock down a spot if possible.
You definitely dodged Carolina because I inadvertently lumped it into Vegas. Yeah. So please elaborate on Carolina. And if you have a second, we'll get back in the Zegras news cycle now that he has returned and played one game for Anaheim. I only bring it up because, again, the Ducks find themselves losers of 7 of 8.
Sure. And look, the Trevor Zegras file for me is always open. It's always open until, you know, Pat Verbeek flat out comes out and says, nah, we're not doing that. How can he? I mean, given where the Ducks are and, you know, the curiosity of the trade, was it the Fowler trade to St. Louis where they basically came out? It was the signing where they deferred the money to Frankie Vetrano. And came out and said, well, we intend on being a cap spending team in the not too distant future, in helping to describe why they were able to convince Vetrano to do what they did. So you look at that, and now you look at the reality of where they're at, and they're still very much a building team. And I think that Zegras has made strides. I do. But I don't see him as being a Pat Verbeek type of player. And I'm never going to see that in Trevor Zegras. doesn't mean that he isn't an exciting talent and that there are general managers and head coaches out there who would like to get, you know, their hand on that skill set and try to develop that more and worry less about the defensive side of his game. So I think the calls are always going to come in. So that one is to be determined. And I'm always going to be skeptical around Zegras. Back to Carolina, though, Duffer, I think that Carolina is still one of those teams that we have to keep open with JT Miller and the Vancouver Canucks. I wouldn't position them as a front runner. I think it's hard to say. I think that they're most definitely one of the primary tire kickers. It was assumed that Marty Natchez would have to go out as part of that trade. And that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me from Carolina's perspective, just based how productive he's been. But more and more, certainly this week anyway, I'm hearing Kotkaniemi's name and other pieces. And if I'm Carolina, sure, I'd move that. I mean, when you look at the Kotkaniemi contract alone, it would make sense why they would want to move that out. But is there a fit there? Based on the dialogue that's been ongoing for several weeks, if not months, between Tom Dundon, now Eric Tulsky, and the Vancouver Canucks, I don't know. You know, maybe at some point, everybody in Vancouver just goes weary and they say, okay, well, let's just take a deal. Who's got the best offer on the table? Maybe that's how this saga ends, and maybe that's how Miller ends up in Carolina, but right now I think it's more just circling.
Dregs, let's do a little this or that press release edition. Which one had the most embarrassing press release? The Rangers, after Tom Wilson manhandled Artemi Panarin a few years ago, and they put the press release out, the letter, and it ended up, you know, Jeff Gordon and John Davidson got fired later and everything. Or the Edmonton Oilers with their press release in, we're supporting McDavid and we're like our fans disappointed in the 3-game suspension. Like, that was an embarrassing press release. So this or that, which one has the most embarrassing press release, the Rangers or the Oilers?
Well, probably the Rangers, just because of the disarray that followed, right? I mean, that whole thing was just madness, you know, and it was fully orchestrated by ownership in New York. I can appreciate, you know, the level of disappointment and angst inside the head offices of the Edmonton Oilers. And a lot of that was probably coming from ownership as well. Although, again, based on, you know, the feedback that I was getting directly from sources within Edmonton, they didn't expect it to be anywhere near three. I think they actually thought it was a one gamer. I felt it was two, and then three comes out. And there's all of this crazy and wild reaction. The one that got me, frankly, had nothing to do with the statement. Corey Perry coming out and talking about how the league has got to do a better job. So what does that mean when he absolutely ran over John Tavares years ago? He should have got a 20 gamer. Like, what are we talking about here?
It was accidental.
Anyway. And in part, I believe it was. He didn't mean to knee Tavares in the head, but, you know, are you just sort of protecting star players or is it across the board? Like, anyway, the whole saga, good the whole point. Thing has been ridiculous.
Great point on Corey Perry. When he spoke out, I'm like, wrong guy.
All right, well, we'll table concession food on ice for another date.
Yep,
nachos.
Nachos. First assist of the year. All right, Dregs, thank you.
All right, guys, have a good weekend.
Sabres Live wraps after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy birthday, Richard Schmelick. Great to always bring up his name. Wonderful time in Sabres history, certainly. Run to the Cup Final in 1999. Just a great dude, right?
Great dude. And for those that, you know, maybe have forgotten, Richard Schmelick has this dog kennel training facility, right, in Amherst, called the Amherst Boarding Kennel. And if guys had nude puppies and dogs and they wanted to train them, Schmelly would go over to their house, and literally within an hour, the dog would be sitting next to his heels, would be like only taking food from the right hand. Like, it was like the dog whisperer. Like, it was unbelievable.
Do coaches in the NHL need to employ these tactics to get their players to play the way they want them to play?
Seriously, train them with a shock collar and treats. That's what you need to do. No, he never did the shock collar, but he was an unbelievable dog trainer as well, and still does amazing.
One word on tonight, Sabres, Flames, 8:30 pregame for us.
Defense. Defense.
Oh, I was waiting for one more. Anyway,
what's he got?
Great. Great. We will see you at 8:30.